and you're rolling with Rockin' Ryan and Dave, the voice of Movies on Up USA. Here they grow again. I'm Dave, joined by the Kingston to my Falls, Ryan.
I was hoping to be the Phoebe Cates to your Zach Galligan.
Okay, he could do that too.
Yeah.
I'm
sitting here with
my
shirt off, that's why.
Yes, we are Movies on Up. The tagline this week, here they grow again. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter, @moviesonup. Let us know what movie it is. If you are right and we pick you, you win the glorious Movies on Up prize pack. This week, very, very special episode.
Full of a whole batch of goodies.
Yes, a whole batch of goodies. New and old. I guess they're all
new. And pre-owned goodies.
Yeah.
But
this very special episode. We've been doing this show probably 2.5 years now. We're dead into October already. This is second week of, this marks the fourth episode of this October. So we're about halfway through there, but very special episode. I mentioned the movie Gremlins any chance I can get. If you've listened from the beginning, I've probably mentioned Gremlins more than any other movie ever on this show.
And that number is going to go up significantly.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about it a lot today, because this episode is dedicated to Gremlins, the 1984 masterpiece directed by Joe Dante, written by Chris Columbus, produced by Steven Spielberg. Phenomenal movie. We'll get into it. We're going to talk a little bit about the movie and then a little bit about a lot of facts that you might may or may not know. It's the 30th anniversary this year.
A lot of good things from 1984. Gremlins, Ghostbusters,
yes.
Your co-host.
Yes. You weren't born June 8th, were you?
No, I was born April 14th,
okay.
1984. So I could have been in a theater to see Gremlins.
Because despite being a Christmas movie, and you can't deny this is a Christmas movie. It sets the tone right away. This is a Christmas movie. Warner Brothers didn't have anything to compete in the summer season that year. So they decided to just open Gremlins up on June 8th. What did it open against? Ghostbusters, another classic. More comedy than horror, but that's two of my all-time favorite movies there. Opening at the same week.
Same exact week.
About 2 weeks after Temple of Doom. Police Academy was in the theaters at that time. Footloose.
Search for Spock. I'll give you, because I wrote down, like, really there were 13 movies that were charting that week. And Ghostbusters was number one. It made $13.5 million. Gremlins was two with $12.5 million. Temple of Doom, three. Search for Spock, four. Number five, Beach Street. Number six was The Natural, seven, Romancing the Stone, eight, the aforementioned Break-In, nine, Streets of Fire, 10, Police Academy, and then 11 through 13, some movies you may have heard of before, Once Upon a Time in America, 16, Candles, and Footloose.
So that's a pretty packed weekend. Like, this is what time travel would be for. If I could go and see Gremlins on opening night and then go catch the following showing
feature
of Ghostbusters, that's what I want. I was only five at the time. I did see both of these movies in theaters, but not back-to-back, not opening weekend. But you mentioned $12.5 million opening weekend for Gremlins. Kind of a big deal. This movie had some budget problems throughout. The puppets, the Gremlins, and the Mogwais were all practical puppets. The Gremlins were costing anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000 per puppet. So this budget ballooned up to $11 million. So it made more than its budget on opening weekend. So I think that kind of justified going over budget. It ended up being the fourth largest film of 1984. Beverly Hills Cop, which opened a couple weeks later, was the number one. Ghostbusters ended up number two, and then Temple of Doom was three. Overall, made $153 million domestically. Not bad on an $11 million budget. That's 259th all-time straight up. If you adjust for inflation, it is 120th all-time. Ryan, you know what movie is 258th all-time?
Let me guess. is it Scooby-Doo?
It is. And then 260 is Sex and the City. So
right.
Both movies that came out considerably later. And an interesting fact about this, with that 153 domestic, once you adjust it, it sits at 120 all-time, but it is the highest grossing movie ever to not hit number one. So of the 109,
after adjusted,
if it's without adjusted, I think it's
28.
In 28th, yeah. But I think that's a pretty cool fact. Like, once you count in inflation, all 119 movies ahead of it.
And if it would have opened a week early, it wouldn't be on that list at all.
Or even a week later. I don't think there were any wide releases the following week. Summers were different than you would have.
I didn't check.
Summers were different. You would have blocks of things opening like 1 week, and then you would have a week or two.
I think Temple of Doom was maybe a week or two before
this. I think
this.
It was 2 weeks. And then Beverly Hills Cop was, I think, 2 weeks after. Yeah. So,
good summer.
Classic summer. I mean, it's one of the all times. Because you think of 83 or 84 or 85, like what sticks out right away? There's a couple, but not this many. So it came out at a good time, even though it was, again, Christmas movie. People were lining up to see it in June. To the actual movie, like, I rewatched it yesterday, and I watched it with all three kids. And it's just like, as much as I love this movie, like, still watching it again last night for the thousandth time I've seen it in my lifetime, so joyous to watch it with my kids, like, and just watch how into Gizmo they were, and then how scared they got at the first few Gremlins scenes, but then how they grew to, like, laugh at the Gremlins and everything, and except Grayson, my youngest, my son, he just laughed the entire time. The mom battling the Gremlins scenes, he was LMAO, laughing his ass off, but whatever, I don't speak internet. But it's 30 years old, and my kids were glued to it. Like, Kayla wants to watch The New Batch tonight. I told her we could watch the second one, and she wants more Gremlins. So the Rand Pelzer scene I really like in the beginning, and it's, you know, how do you get this exotic creature to just a tiny, tiny village? And I love the Rand Pelzer character. My only complaint is that as good as Hoyt Axton was, he's so underused in this movie. He's just kind of served there to get from point A to point B, and he does it so good. And we'll talk more about him as that character in a little bit, but then after he gets the Mogwai, they establish the scene, and then you get the title. The Christmas music coming in, the overlook of Kingston Falls, which, if it looks familiar, it's also the same town in Back to the Future. They use the exact same set, so you can see the watchtower, the clock tower, and the movie theater is actually where the DeLorean crashes through it at the end.
Watching the commentary, hearing Dante specifically is kind of a cinephile talk about when they were shooting on sets and sound stages. At this point, you know, we're talking 100 years of Warner Brother movie making then, not quite 100, but still a very impressive lot of films. Like, oh yeah, this is where I think a James Dean movie was shot across the street here. This was the back of Dennis the Menace's house. I guess it would be kind of neat to hear the history behind. You have a movie that you like Gremlins, and there are little bits and pieces. The Back to the Future, probably for us or people of our vintage, probably the best link. But it is neat that, like, really all these movies kind of share some common sets.
And I just think it's cool because it's the kind of thing you might not notice. But, like, once you realize, like, especially that wide scene at the beginning, and it's the same town as Back to the Future. So they didn't – I mean, it ended up burning down after Back to the Future, but – the tower is the same, the movie theater. It's just pretty cool. It's modeled after, I forget the name of the town, and It's a Wonderful Life, but they wanted it to have that feel, and the opening of the movie does. You have the Christmas Carol, you have the snow, you have all that. Then you even introduce Mrs. Deagle, who comes off like a musical character. Like, she's always very Mayor Shin to me. Mayor Shin was the bad guy in Music Man, and Mrs. Deagle always had that feel to me. It's set up like it's an old movie, like it's a Wonderful Life, to where it's, you're setting up this small town, you have this cartoony villain. It's very atmospheric, and I love that about it, and it sucks you in, and the characters are good because it doesn't rush to get to the Gremlins at all.
No, I mean, you do have to wait a significant amount of time to actually get the Gremlins, which is what the movie's titled.
And there's not even a tease.
It's not called Mogwais.
Yeah, we talk, and there's not even a tease. Like, we talked,
not a Jurassic Park tease.
The Jurassic Park tease, where you, that seeing that T-Rex eye at the beginning buys you. You could take 30, 40 minutes to set up the story. They don't get any of that. You don't even see the Mogwai when Rand Pelzer buys it. You see it when Billy sees it, which is cool. It sets up the family. Like, you get Rand. Like, the Pelzers are an odd bunch. And that's why the horror stuff is so good when it gets to it. Even the school teacher, who is the first casualty, he's established. It's not just, oh, here's a random dude to kill off. You see how much Billy and him get along, and Even Corey Feldman likes them, and I don't know why they're at the same school. But
he's advanced, clearly. Yeah.
I've said over and over about this movie. When it wants to be a comedy, it's great. Some of the dialogue, like Mrs. Deagle's dialogue, Judge Reinhold talking to Billy at the bar, like just little stuff like that. The dialogue's good. The characters are great. I think Zach Galligan was kind of perfect for this because he does have that like innocent charm to him.
I mean, he's a good everyman.
Yeah, he's very good everyman, and he pulled it off very well. But then once it turns to horror, it gets damn horror. I mean, like the scene, the mom. I mean, even the school scene where the you don't see the gremlin yet. You get a hand. You get a death, but you still don't see the gremlins until it's time for mom to face them.
The first time you see the gremlin is when Billy's bandaging himself up, and it kind of just shows up out of the little
cabinet
there.
Yeah, there's that. But then you see him better when she's fighting Mrs. Peltzer.
Yeah.
And that scene's so good because it's a mom. I mean, it's just, what's your mom going to do in that situation? And she played it so well that it's at that point it's survival, and the using the kitchen utensils I liked. We almost didn't get this scene at all. We'll get to that in a little bit, but when it wanted to be horror, it was so good. And then when it wanted to be comedy, like the bar scene, the Christmas caroling scene, like all that stuff, it's so good. We'll talk more about the movie as we get into like facts about it. It was the 30th anniversary this year, like we said, so you can find a million articles of a bunch of interesting stuff about Gremlins, and I tried to piece them all together as well as I could because I like it, and I'm fascinated by a lot of this. The number one thing, like we'll get it out of the way first, is a lot of people try to use this in trivia as saying this is like the first PG-13 movie, but it wasn't.
No, it was rated PG, but I think that this and Temple of Doom, people kind of look at, and even the makers of the movie mention the fact that these two movies really highlighted the need for there has to be something between PG and R because I mean Gremlins as a PG movie, especially the way it was marketed, like oh hey, remember E.T.? this looks a little like E.T. Yeah. So it'll be fine. This is not the movie you're looking for. You bring your 6-7 year old kids at the time who didn't know what the hell was about to happen to them. So I think in terms of a trivia, well, technically that's not true, but you see what they're getting.
Yeah, because this and Temple of Doom got a lot of flack for being so violent because it didn't hold back the violence. I mean, a gremlin blows up in a microwave. Like, that happens.
A man's heart gets pulled out of his chest.
Yeah, so Spielberg is actually the one that went to the MPAA and said, what if there's something between them? And then within a couple of months, they had PG-13 and Red Dawn was actually the first movie release with that PG-13 rating. This movie it wasn't ever written with
it wasn't supposed to be PG-13.
Well, no, it wasn't supposed to be
or PG.
No, and it wasn't even supposed to be made, really. Chris Columbus, when he was looking for work, he wrote this as a spec script. Spec script is just something when you're trying to get hired that you write to show that you know how to write a script, you know how to write characters, you know how to do story.
And this is when he was still at NYU. He's a college student at the time.
This was his spec script. This is what he was sending out to just, hey, here's how I write, blah, blah, blah. And Spielberg got a hold of it and immediately wanted it, but had to make quite a few changes to the script because the original script, very, very dark. there's no way it would have gotten away with a PG-13.
No, it would have been R.
Yeah.
A hard R.
Just some of the stuff, the teacher, his death ended up with him getting a dozen syringes stabbed into his face. There was a scene where the gremlins eat Billy's dog. There was an invasion of a McDonald's where the
people
gremlins
get eaten,
were
but the hamburgers don't.
Eating people and the hamburgers went untouched. And then probably the biggest one, and I think this changes, we mentioned.
To me, it's the dog. Like
The dog's
probably the second best part of the movie.
Yeah, but I just talked about how much I love the scene with the mom fighting the gremlins. In the original,
had a very different ending.
Yeah. In the original, she goes up to the attic because she hears noises. That's the end of that scene until Billy comes home and her decapitated head is rolling down the stairs. So you don't get the mom fighting the gremlins. You don't get the Christmas tree scene. is one of the coolest shots. I mean, forget the fact that you could see the crew member behind in the flannel shirt pushing the tree over, but just the lights, and then the lights go out and you see the red eyes. Like, that's such a cool scene. And the knife and the balloon, the blowing up in the
microwave. Balloon gremlin.
They used the balloon to blow it up. But, I mean, that you take away that scene, and that changes the movie drastically. It was a lot darker. One of the biggest changes that Spielberg came in, Gizmo disappeared at some point. Not disappeared, but instead of Stripe, the Stripe Mogwai that turns into Stripe the Gremlin, Gizmo ended up mutating into a gremlin, and he would be essentially what Stripe was, where he was the leader of it. So it would be Billy having to face his
killing
new pet.
Gizmo.
Yeah. Spielberg, dude's had a pretty good career, and a lot of it's due to decision-making. Like, hey, let's not kill Gizmo, because I think people like him.
That'll score pretty high.
Yeah. So Gizmo ended up not getting killed.
I mean, I kind of want to see, and I wish it could happen, especially now. Like, instead of doing, they've talked about it. They did a Gremlin sequel, and there's talk about doing a reboot or another sequel. I wish they'd make Chris Columbus's original Gremlin script.
I wish there was a studio out there, just animate them.
Platinum Dunes, I'm talking to you.
That just made animated movies of movies that didn't happen. Give me an animated version from front to back of Chris Columbus's original Gremlin script. Give me that Tim Burton Superman movie.
With Nick Cage?
Yeah, just animated. Because I want to see that. As much as I love this movie, I want to see darker. And if they do reboot it, I do want it to be a little bit darker. Not that this wasn't dark. I mean, it's...
After hearing how different this movie could have been, you can't help but be curious. As a 7-year-old maybe watching this for the first time, I really have a remembrance of it. I'd have been bummed, if there was no Gizmo throughout the whole thing, because I loved Gizmo. I was a kid with a heart, of course.
But
as an adult with no heart, I want to see Gizmo just go straight up baller.
Because, I mean, you have a scene with a dude dressed as Santa with just gremlins all over him eating him. And it's like, how does it get darker than that? That was tame compared to what we got. But I do love that. And that's a young Mike from Breaking Bad. Jonathan Banks is the deputy in this movie. There's a lot of people in this movie. But as far as the darkness goes, the studio wanted it even lighter. One of the scenes that caused the most controversy in test screenings and in getting it through the studio was when Phoebe Cates' her character is explaining why she hates Christmas. Because she's pretty dark about Christmas when it comes up earlier, and it's like, oh, Christmas, suicide rate goes up during Christmas, and blah, blah, blah. But then when she explains why, the studio executives and even Spielberg thought, that's a little too dark, especially because where it comes out. I mean, it comes out during the horror part, so it's not like it's there during the fun stuff.
But at least some of the fun stuff.
I mean, the bar scenes already happened.
But even when people are getting killed, the Santa Claus is getting eaten.
Rolling the window up.
Yeah, the hell with that guy. Like, you can kind of chuckle at this, but she kind of does grind the movie to a screeching halt. Now, it's only about a minute long, but it's so uncomfortable. It's like you kind of want to laugh because but if it happened to you, you wouldn't be laughing.
And that's what everybody's problem was with it is she tells a story about her dad trying to surprise her, breaking his neck in the chimney and just dying in there.
And rotting.
And the studio, their main point to Dante was, is it supposed to be funny or is it supposed to be sad? Like, we don't know if audiences are going to know if they're supposed to laugh or cry at this point. And his point was, that sums up the whole movie. And when you think about it, this movie is summed up perfectly in that minute speech. Because it's such a wacky story that's like, I should find humor in this, but it's really not funny. And that kind of sums up the entire movie. And Spielberg had total creative control over this movie. He had every right.
He shared final cut with Dante.
Yes, and he had final say if it came down to it. So he had every right to take this out, but he trusted Dante's vision and left it in, which is a cool story to see because you hear so many of the bad cuts and stuff, but for it being a dark family movie, like Dante kind of prided himself on that it was marketed as kid. There were toys, there were trading cards, there was all this stuff, and that's why Snow White is the movie they're watching at the end. Because when you look at Disney movies, Snow White is probably one of the darker ones, because there are parts in the forest where it's actually pretty brutal. But as much as Dante had the faith of Spielberg, he almost did not get the job, as a young Tim Burton was heavily considered after Frankenweenie. But he had only done Frankenweenie at the time. So that's another thing, like a Tim Burton Gremlins movie.
I would watch that.
Yeah, I mean, this is before Tim Burton was what Tim Burton is now, but he definitely had an eye from the very beginning, and his name was thrown out there, but the lack of having a feature film under his belt kind of...
Having The Howling, I think, really helped Dante, because that was a motion picture that Spielberg liked a lot. Mm-hmm. It showed that he could handle... Especially, you know, with a movie that had the transformation scenes like The Howling had, he was able to take a lot of his special effects guys with him and say, okay, we've done this, we can do this as well. And I thought they did a really great job with the puppets. Now, I wish that they would have been given a larger budget. I realize it was a gamble at the time for the studio to give them even what they did. But I feel like those guys, as good as it turned out, it could have been so much better.
There's so much talk about the puppets. Like I said earlier, they're $30,000 to $40,000 per puppet. They were guarded. Like every cast member and crew member had to, before leaving for the day, had to stop and have their car inspected and check the trunk to make sure nobody was sneaking gremlins. They were guarded in a trailer called Das Box, like to keep people away. So, and they had a sign on there. I forget they made up a chemical. That it was the trailer that had the gremlins stored in it said, like, toxigen, 99% fatal or something. They just had this sign they actually got complaints from people on the lot complaining about having this made-up chemical on there. But it worked. As for casting, we talked about Zach Galligan playing Billy. He hadn't really done anything. I believe that's his feature debut, but he had that innocent every guy look. Phoebe Cates had already been cast. The studio wasn't 100% on board with her because they did want to market this to families, and she had just shown her tatas, so they thought she maybe wasn't the right choice. But Galligan's chemistry with her is what got him the role over Emilio Estevez and Judd Nelson are really the only two names that I could find that were considered for it. Would you take either one of those? I mean, this is pre-Breakfast Club, so you take Estevez or Judd Nelson and talk about how different this movie gets. And Galligan really didn't do much after this. Like, he didn't go on to be a big time.
Are you kidding me? Are you discounting the work he did in Waxwork?
Yeah, Waxwork. That's what it was.
And one Grimmins and two. Too.
Yeah, but he was good. Phoebe Cates was good. If you wonder why Billy's character hangs out with a 12-year-old Corey Feldman all the time, it's because the Billy character was originally younger. And Corey Feldman was actually cast very early. He had really only done commercials. So they cast a young Corey Feldman to be the friend. And then they just aged Billy up. So now you have a guy just working at a bank, hanging out with a 13-year-old kid.
Nothing to see here. Move along. Yeah,
but the voices. Everybody knows Howie Mandel was the voice of Gizmo. Not the singing, though. He didn't do the theme that was written by Jerry Goldsmith. They had some little girl from a church hum the theme. Frank Welker, who was the voice of Megatron on Transformers and Kermit on The Muppet Babies, was the voice of Stripe. He was actually the one that suggested Howie Mandel for Gizmo. And then for the voice of the other gremlins that weren't Stripe, Michael Winslow of Police Academy.
Peter Cullen,
who's Optimus Prime. Those were the main two guys doing the rest of the voices. So, I mean, that's quite a powerhouse of voices. You got Welker, Cullen, and Winslow. And no dialogue was ever written for the Gremlins. Like, all that was kind of ad-libbed on the fly, even though they don't talk a whole bunch, but all the noises and stuff just kind of made up as they went. Hoyt Axton's just an interesting dude. He played Rand Peltzer. He was kind of Dante's choice, even though he wasn't maybe the best for it, Joe Hingle had given the best performance on tape, but Dante kind of thought that he would be too good, that it would distract from it, and they just really liked what Axton brought to the role. He kind of had a blueprint, but the rest of his lines were kind of improv'd, so it's basically just put Hoyt Axton on screen and let it roll. Him giving the business card is so good, making the bringing logic to an illogical world or something. Just he's such a good like talker. He seems like a scummy salesman.
The scene originally it was much longer, where he's trying to first sell the smokeless ashtray inside of the gas station. Like, I guess that went on for quite a while, and that was sort of improv'd as well. But that's just because Dante was like, God, I like this guy so much. I want to use him as much as I can in this movie. And they cut that scene way the hell down.
Yeah, and that's why he ended up being the narrator of it. He does the narration at the beginning and end because they were just trying to figure – I said earlier how Hoyt Axton was underused as Rand Pelzer. They were just trying to figure out ways they could use him.
I think originally the film didn't even start with a narration. That was something
it
that,
didn't. They added that to get right. to kind of get more use out of Hoyt Axton.
And they seemed to like the way that it kind of fit with like a story, like a fairy tale, by having that first narration and then going to Chinatown.
But a weird thing about Hoyt Axton, this is not really a Gremlins fun fact, but a Hoyt Axton fun fact. Songwriter, before he was always a more prominent songwriter than actor. He wrote Joy to the World, Three Dog Night's main hit. He also wrote the theme song for Flo, the short-lived spinoff of Alice, which is interesting because who played Flo? Mrs. Deagle.
It's a small world.
There's so many things in this movie to where just everything all kind of adds up. But as you know, we talk about Galligan being a newcomer and not really anything. There's some big time actors in this movie. I mean,
Nicky Catt.
Nicky Catt, a young Nicky Catt shows up. A young Jonathan Banks, pre Breaking Bad, is in there. Tom Bergeron, host of America's Funniest Home Videos. Kenneth Toby is in there. Chuck Jones makes a cameo. The Looney Tunes artist. I love his cameo because it's just a scene of Billy just drawing in the bar and just a random dude sitting next to him watching him draw. Chuck Jones, world famous animator. Key Luke, the guy Mr. Wing at the beginning, actually the original Kato.
Number one son.
Yeah, the original Kato on the Green Hornet show. Spielberg, Jerry Goldsmith both make cameos.
Robbie the Robot makes a cameo.
That whole scene is amazing, and that's actually next on my list. Like, I want to talk about that one scene. Talk about cramming as much you can into Hoyt Axton role.
I can segue even when I'm not hosting the show.
This scene, it's when Hoyt Axton calls from the Inventors Convention, and he's sitting there, and there's a guy behind him on the phone in a stupid Pharrell cowboy hat. That's Jerry Goldsmith, the conductor of the score. And then on the other side, on the other phone, is Zach Galligan's stand-in dressed as Joe Dante. So just kind of throwing in those two. And you have a guy on like a sit-down exercise bike, Steven Spielberg. But the best thing about this scene is when he's first on the phone, you have Goldsmith and Galligan's double and then Steven Spielberg. In the background, if you're watching, it's to the back right, is the time machine from the Time Machine movie in the 60s-ish. And then it cuts to the house to show that nobody answers the phone. It cuts back, and in the background where the time machine was, it's not there anymore. There's just a puff of smoke and people looking confused. But no attention is drawn to it. It's one of my favorite, most subtle things ever. Absolutely love that part. It's so subtle, and you're fitting so many jokes into just one scene. And this is at a point where the movie's not joke-heavy at this time. This is where we're balls deep into it at this point. But you mentioned Robbie the
Fuzzy Balls.
Yeah. You mentioned Robbie the Robot. Robbie the Robot walks by. This is where everything starts to kind of snowball into each other. The voice of Robbie the Robot was Marvin Miller. When you go back to the school scene, what the kids are watching on the projector is Hemo the Magnificent, starring Marvin Miller, also directed by Frank Capra, who directed It's a Wonderful Life, which the Kingston Falls is modeled after, which shows up in the first three movies Christopher Columbus directed. There's clips of It's a Wonderful Life and Home Alone, Home Alone 2, and I forget the third one. This one has a small clip from it, though. And then Edward Arnold, who often played the tycoon villain in many of Frank Capra's films. He was actually Mr. Deagle. So as Mrs. Deagle goes up the stairs, who is the tycoon-y type character? You see pictures of Edward Arnold, who starred in many Capra films. So it's just, we talked about Dante being a cinephile, and, you know, Chris Columbus is a cinephile, and Steven Spielberg. You just have all these things that, once you link them all together, it's like, that's just crazy. The fact that all these little, they're not
coincidences. It's very self-referential.
Yes, at this point, they're not coincidences, because, and we haven't even got into the Spielberg self-referentialness of it. Yeah, he makes a cameo, but at the very beginning, when Rockin' Ricky D'Alto comes on, it's showing the
Indiana
the
Jones
billboard. It's an Indiana Jones spinoff, whipping up the hits or whipping up the oldies. When he goes past the movie theater, the movies on the movie theater are A Boy's Life and Watch the Skies, which A Boy's Life was the working title for E.T. Watch the Skies was the working title for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So very inside self-referential. And then a not-so-subtle nod at the store at
the toy
end.
Store.
There's the E.T. doll, which
there's the I think Bugs Bunny and maybe
it's
Sylvester
all the Looney
there.
Tunes.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of Looney Tunes characters.
And E.T.
And E.T. just right in the center. And I think it was Dante really wanted a scene where Stripe rips up E.T., but he couldn't get it in there. This spawned, in the following years, you had Ghoulies, Critters, Munchies, Hobgoblins, and Troll, that all of those tried to pull off the campy horror and the like campy comedy. I like the Critters movies. The rest of these are, and Ghoulies were just dumb.
Hobgoblins was atrocious.
Yeah, Troll, Troll 2 is widely known as the worst movie ever made. I mean, Ghoulies and Critters, you could maybe find your spots here and there, but Hobgoblins, Troll, I don't remember Munchies all that much.
No, I don't either. I'm going to have to go watch it, though.
I remember the name. There was also an anime. I forget the name of the anime that was ripping off. Not ripping off, but going along the tiny monster things. But,
hold me closer, tiny monster.
But just get back to the Gremlins. Like, the actual scenes with the Gremlins. These are all puppeteers doing this, except there's only one stop motion shot, which is them coming.
And you
up
can
the
tell,
and
which
it
one
looks
it is.
Weak. And yeah. Dante has said that's the only he couldn't do any more scenes like that because it's just so time consuming. But the detail and the jokes into it, like one of my favorite scenes of all time is when they do show up at Mrs. Deagle's doorstep. She hears Christmas carolers and gets mad, goes to throw water on them in the freezing cold, opens it up. And there they are just in scarves and sock hats, like dresses, carolers, singing the Gremlins theme, which I think is so, to me, that's one of the funniest things about it. They're just singing the Gremlins thing, and they're looking down at like lyrics, like they need to look at lyrics. And it's so much little subtle stuff thrown into that one scene that I love it. And then you have the bar scene that is much more expanded. On that, you have the, you know, the nods to the gangster movies. You have the scene with the belly that's duplicated again in Gremlins 2 with the yogurt. Just so many different things.
My favorite was like the Gremlins themselves are largely puppets. And then you have one of the Gremlins, which is a puppet, having another puppet on. And it was kind of like the snake eating its tail. And the other Gremlin just not being amused at that at all. Love that.
A couple of my favorite things in that bar scene is the aerobics Gremlin.
It's like the flash dance.
The flash dance Gremlin. Yeah. What's fun about that?
Break dance, the breaking Gremlin.
Is that Mega Madness? Mega Madness. The song that Gremlin's dancing to was written and performed by Michael Cimbello, who also wrote and performed Maniac for Flashdance, which I thought was pretty cool.
He was in on it.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool. I love that the Gremlin at the end when he goes to shoot, he's wearing a ski mask. Like for some reason that makes me laugh. And just like him just, it's such a subtle thing, but just him moving the gun around
when she moves
and her just like, okay, I'll duck. And then one of the subtle things is when he shoots a picture on the wall of a World War II fighter jet, which is where the term gremlin came from, is that they would often blame gremlins on flight malfunctions. So just subtle stuff.
I think Dick Miller gives a speech when he's about to drunk drive that tractor home where he starts talking about the Gremlins.
Yeah. Futterman does. And at the beginning, when Hoyt's walking down, when Rand Pelcher's walking down through Chinatown or whatever, he actually passes a Gremlin car, which is probably one of the worst cars ever made. But, I mean, that's just a lot of stuff that you probably didn't care about. But for a movie I love, that stuff fascinates me. Like, just to see how everything ties together and the love for Frank Capra and trying to make it as much like It's a Wonderful Life as possible.
With flesh-eating creatures.
Yeah. So, I mean, it works on so many levels. Not only did the violence cause kind of a stir, the movie kind of has another negative stigma about it, which I guess I never thought of, but I guess I don't look for that kind of stuff. This movie's been dubbed as pretty racist for the last 30 years. They claim the gremlins, who are the menace, have a lot of African-American stereotypes, the eating the fried chicken with their hands, the breakdancing, and it's... I guess I just wasn't looking at it like that.
I think if you want to frame it that way, I mean...
But, I mean, there's also there was the aerobics thing, which that's a white girl thing. There
and
was the,
like, if you look
the
at the
Italian
80s,
yeah,
that week that it was out, we talked about you had Beach Street and Breakin' were in theaters, so of course it was gonna, because that was at the time that was popular.
Yeah, and it was more just knocking on pop culture than it was. I don't want to get into the argument just because I didn't, but I mean, there's been studies published about the racism behind Gremlins and. I hope that wasn't Dante's intention.
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it at all. There was a book written a few years after it came out that kind of breaks down why it's so racist. And it's a terrible argument that I really didn't even realize existed until I was preparing for this episode. And it's one of those times in my life where it's like, oh, I stumbled across an article on an extremist white power website, and I agree with it. So, like... That's a point in my life I never wanted to hit. I don't see the racism in this. Maybe it's naive white guy, but I don't think it just lampooned blacks. It really didn't. Because, like I said, the bar scene alone, like the gluttony with the pouring beer down the throat, that's fat white guy. You know, the Italians with the card stuff, like...
I think they were just mimicking human behavior.
Yeah.
Or trying to. And that's, to me, that's the part of the Gremlins that I really liked.
Yeah.
Not when they were monsters, but when they had the ski mask on or when they were playing cards and the one had the ace in its head. Like when they were mimicking not white person behavior, they're just human behavior.
And pop culture, which at that time, like I said, Breakin' and Beat Street were in theaters. So why wouldn't they break dance? I love this movie. Outside of the racism, some might look at it as a view on capitalism, which I think you're reaching. I think it's just a fun horror comedy. Yeah, I'm sure they maybe tried to say something else that I missed, but I don't think there's any deep meanings that
I don't think
went
it's an
unnoticed.
Allegory for.
Yeah, no, it's maybe commercialism or I don't know, but I love this movie so much, and the fact that 30 years after it came out. I watched it last night and still got as much joy as I have in every other time. Just to see my kids love Gizmo and see them laugh at the bar scene, 3 minutes after being terrified of the Christmas tree scene. Movies don't work on this level anymore. It's so hard to find. I've often praised like Shaun of the Dead because Shaun of the Dead is one of the funniest comedies of the last 20 years. And when it wants to be a horror movie, it's one of the best like zombie movies of the last 20 years. Gremlins did that. Gremlins pulled that off, where when it wants to be a comedy, it's a great comedy. When it wants to be a horror movie, it's a great horror movie. It's also kind of a family movie, which is a whole new angle that you throw in there. So much so that it got all this flack for the violence and everything. But when The New Batch came out 6 years later, one of the taglines was, take your batch to see The New Batch. Like, they were still promoting it as a family movie. They were still selling Gizmo toys. The trading cards really upped when the
I think
one...
after Gremlins, like, and people saw that, when Gremlins 2 came out, I was like, okay.
They knew what they were getting
into. I know what we're getting into. Yeah, I
or
mean...
they thought they knew what they were getting into.
Yeah, exactly. That's a completely different argument. But, like you said, it you can show this movie to your kids, and it's fine. Like, as long as they know that, okay, there is some scary stuff in this movie. I think that's fine. If you went into it in 1984 expecting, E.T. that's just kind of heartwarming sort of from beginning to end, you know, you might have been somewhat shocked, but I don't think people were any less able to deal with horror concepts in 84 than they were now, that's for sure.
But I mean, ultimately, the movie's 30 years old. It's still beloved. New people are seeing it all the time and loving it. It not only made $153 million on an $11 million budget, really well-received by critics for the most part, too. Siskel and Ebert both liked it. They just, the only thing they really complained about in their review of it was the Phoebe Cates scene that we talked about being too dark and just kind of a stopper in the middle. The only like major critic that really ripped it apart was Joe Dante's college roommate, Leonard Maltin, who ripped it apart but ended up lampooning himself in the second one, coming in and reading that review before getting eaten by gremlins. So the movie was just so fun. And, I mean, Gremlins 2, I don't want to talk about. Maybe next Halloween we'll do a Gremlins 2 episode.
If you talk about Gremlins 2 for the next year.
Yeah, but because, I mean, I love it. I think, to me, it's one of the greatest sequels ever because it
Dante likes it more than the first one.
I love what it – I mean, I love everything about it because you could have made this happen again. You could have done a small town overtaken by gremlins, but you didn't. And you changed the tone of the movie. And that's why I liked what 22 Jump Street did. I mean, it feels different than the first movie. Like, it's lampooning the first movie, which, you know, the Gremlins 2 is very much a parody of Gremlins 1 to an extent. You have Leonard Maltin ripping on the movie. You have you have running jokes that go from one movie to the second. You have Phoebe Cates talk about why she hates President's Day. Like, it's – or Lincoln's birthday, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just – there's so many things, and it's such a great sequel. But I could go on for just as long about Gremlins 2 as I did about Gremlins. But if you want to read something interesting, go read about the novelization of this movie. Movie novelizations aren't as big now as they used to be because most movies are coming from novels. But novelizations were huge in the 80s. And this is one of the weirdest ones. Just some of the changes they made from the theatrical version to the novelization version. Very, very weird. So we'll leave that for you to go read on yourself. But the novelization of Gremlins is pretty weird. Overall, we're talking about a movie that's 30 years old that I think absolutely still stands up the test of time. Like, the practical effects still look great. Like, the gremlins look terrifying. Like, there you see candid shots from the set of just, like, the one producer sitting at his desk and it's surrounded by, like, four of the puppets. They're terrifying creatures. They are ugly, terrible-looking creatures, but they're so damn cute and likable at the same time. So
yeah, when they're doing cute human things, they are very, very
not when
funny.
They're eating Santa Claus.
Yeah, not so much.
That's Gremlins. I think I pretty much dominated that one. You felt like you didn't let me talk much during the Thing episode. I think I just raised the bar there on this one. But
I think it'll all even out in the wash.
Hell, I don't ever prepare for episodes, and I did this time, so I wanted to take full advantage of that. But let us know your thoughts on Gremlins. Hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. Are we wrong? Do you not understand it? Like, do you not see why it's so beloved?
Or do you think it's racist and you'd like to explain to us why?
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear the fried chicken thing because I enjoy fried chicken a lot.
Yeah. And they eat everything with their bare hands.
That's true.
Like, what were they supposed to do?
They ate eight people with their bare
hands. Like, some of the stuff just seemed like they were reaching. But if you haven't seen Gremlins, please watch it and let us know what you think. Like, I hope that somebody, if you haven't seen Gremlins, I hope you haven't been listening this whole time because there's not really much surprise left for you. That's it. Next week we'll be back with whatever the hell episodes we have, but we're right in the middle of October, so we're enjoying it so far. I love Octobers for us, so hopefully you do too. And we'll be back next week with even more horror-themed stuff. So until then,
keep it up.